So Aura read to us the first 10 verses from John chapter 20. And on this Easter day, we're going through this chapter and seeing the different reactions from the different disciples and people that heard the news of Jesus' resurrection. So in these first verses, we hear about Peter and John. So if you weren't sure where it talks about the disciple who Jesus loved, that's John, and it's he refers to John as the disciple who Jesus loved throughout the Gospel of John. So Peter and John, we're told, when they hear the news from Mary, they leg it. They just start running for the tomb. They're like, we've got to check this out. We've got to see what on earth is going on. Is she deluded? What on earth is she on about, this woman? Can we believe what women say? No way. Let's go and check it out for ourselves. So they set off, and I love the detail that we see that John arrives first. So he's obviously got more stamina, or, you know, stronger legs or something. He gets there first, but he doesn't go in. He just peeps in and sees that the linen's lying there, that there's not a body, there's just the grave clothes. And I kind of imagine that he's a bit kind of dumbfounded, like, oh my goodness. Peter comes bezzing up behind him and just goes straight in there, straight in the tomb. He's like, I'm going to have a look. You know, we know from Peter, don't we, from the different readings, that he's quite, you know, impetuous, and he's, you know, he speaks or acts first and thinks later. He just goes straight in and looks. And between the two of them, they see that the grave clothes are there, but there is no body, that Jesus was risen from the dead. And so we see immediately the differences in reaction between Peter and John and the rest of the disciples. The rest of the disciples stayed put, didn't they? We don't know what they were doing at this point, probably talking over, wondering. And Peter and John just go straight there. And then when they get there, their reactions are different. One kind of standing at the door and peeping in, as it were, and the other one just going straight in there. But when they saw the grave clothes, that was when the light dawned on them, and they suddenly realized the truth of the resurrection, that Jesus is not dead anymore. Hold on, all those things that he said, that he was the Son of Man, but also the Son of God, and that death and resurrection was God's way of enacting his rescue plan. And this kind of light dawned in their hearts as they stood there looking at the grave clothes and no body. But I wonder what the other disciples were talking about when they were waiting for Peter and John to return. I wonder whether they had started to dare to believe what the women had said when they came back from the tomb. I mean, in this point in history, you know, women had a very low standing in society, so they probably weren't likely to believe what they said. Did they start to hope, maybe, that maybe it could be true, that maybe Jesus had risen from the dead? Would they be remembering all those things that Jesus had said about destroy the temple and I'll rebuild it in 3 days? Hold on, 3 days. Could he have been talking about himself rather than the actual building? Remember what he said about the grain of wheat that falls into the ground and dies to produce fruit. Did he have to die as part of all this plan? Were they starting to piece things together, ready for when Peter and John came back and gave them the news that it was true, that Jesus' body was not there because he had risen? Did they start to dare to believe that all the darkness and the despair and the lack of hope from Good Friday was dissipating, and actually they realized that this was all part of God's plan? Did they start to dare to believe again? So we just heard the next few verses from 11 to 18 about Mary Magdalene's encounter with Jesus. Now, Mary may not have been counted as one of the 12 disciples, as one of the Jesus's inner circle, but she was one of the group that followed him very closely. She would have been part of a group of people who followed Jesus around. He didn't just have the 12 disciples. He invested a lot of time in teaching with them, but there was a large group that would have followed him. And Mary was one of those. She was one of the few who stayed close by when Jesus was crucified. We read in John 19, 25 that she was there watching and wailing. It would have been absolutely life-shattering for her to see. Jesus had given Mary everything that she ever needed: the respect, the dignity, the community and sense of belonging, that kind of extended family. He'd given her freedom from evil influence, you know, set her free. And a hope for the future. And then on Good Friday, as she saw her master and her friend cruelly nailed to that cross, all her hopes and dreams would have come down crashing around her, and she would have just not known what on earth was happening and what was going on. And the only thing that she could do now to honour her friend and her master was to tend to his body in death. And we're told, aren't we, that they prepared the spices and the oils to go and anoint his body, as was the custom at that time. And so she'd arrived as soon as she possibly could, the first light on that first day after the Sabbath, where she could go to the tomb and anoint his body. And she realized the body wasn't there, that one thing that she had left that she could do. And yet that has now come crashing down. There is no body. Someone's stolen him. Where have they put him? Where have they taken him? She is distraught at this point. So, you know, that they've taken him. I don't know where they've put him. This is the one thing I could do for my Lord. And now that's been taken away from me. But, you know, we read that she turned around and saw another person standing there. And I don't know whether it was because she didn't realize that it was Jesus, maybe because her eyes were so full of tears, or maybe because she literally had her head bowed and she couldn't see his face, or just because the fact that the idea that he could be alive again hadn't even entered her head yet. She couldn't start to believe that that could be true. But of course, we hear, don't we, that it was when he said her name, he spoke one word, Mary. He said her name, and all of a sudden, there was no more doubt. All of those hopes and dreams that came crashing down were suddenly reinstated. That resurrection had power in her life to resurrect all that she needed, that hope and the joy for the future, that there was someone who loved her, that there was someone who made a way for her, that she was respected. And and the instructions were clear, weren't they, when Jesus said to her, "But you can't cling to me yet. I need you to go and tell the disciples about me." So can you imagine at this moment, not only does she have the thrill and the elation and the relief of the fact that Jesus is alive, but also he's appeared to her first, before any of the 12 disciples. This lady, probably unmarried, we don't know what kind of background she had, we don't know much about her at all, and yet Jesus appeared to her first. What dignity, what respect, what love, what acceptance that he showed her and said, "Go and tell the disciples." So that was just an amazing encounter that Mary had. I think she would probably be thinking at this point, what on earth, what kind of a topsy-turvy king is he to trust a woman with a message to go and tell the male disciples with? What kind of a topsy-turvy king is he who can win victory by dying, by allowing cruel people to kill him? What kind of a topsy-turvy kingdom is this? What kind of topsy-turvy teaching and values has he been teaching? But now he's now living and demonstrating and showing the truth and the victory in doing so. Well, whatever kind of topsy-turvy king and topsy-turvy kingdom it is, I love it and I'm part of it, and hallelujah, Jesus is alive. So we've just heard verses 19 to 29 of John chapter 20, and this is where we get to hear especially Thomas's reaction to the news that Jesus is alive. Now, we don't know why Thomas wasn't with the disciples that first time that he appeared to them and pronounced peace. You know, he pronounced shalom, didn't he? His peace over their turbulent hearts and minds. But we know that he did find it very difficult to believe, even though the whole group were now saying we've seen Jesus. He still found it incredibly difficult to believe. In fact, he said that he couldn't believe unless he could actually see the nail wounds and put his fingers in them, or see the wound on Jesus' side and put his hand in it. Now, I hear that and just think, ooh, that's a bit much, Thomas. That's a bit much. But for him, because of his disappointment, because of everything that he'd invested in Jesus that had come crashing down, just like Mary, he found that he couldn't believe unless he had like the injuries right in front of him, unless Jesus was standing there saying, "Look, it's me, here are the nail marks." But we know that God knows all things. God knows what we need. And in Thomas's brokenness and disappointment and doubt, Jesus knew that he needed that level of reassurance of the truth. And so 8 days later, notice it's not immediate. You know, we were thinking earlier about sometimes our answers to prayer come straight away. Sometimes they take a while. Sometimes they take flipping ages. And we think, come on, God. But, you know, at this point, the disciples had all seen Jesus apart from Thomas. He had to wait 8 days with them all saying, you know, Jesus is alive, and he couldn't believe it until he appeared again to them when Jesus was with them. And he invited Thomas, didn't he? He said, here's my hands. Put your fingers in the nail wounds. You know, you said you need to do this. I'm here. You can do this. And you can believe now. And Thomas said, my Lord and my God. And finally, he could believe. He could overcome that doubt. And then Jesus said, will you believe because you've seen me? But blessed are those who believe without seeing me. You know, he's talking about us. We don't get to see the figure of Jesus in front of us and being able to see those nail marks and the wound in his side. But we are more blessed because we believe through faith rather than through sight. So Jesus knows that we are all different. We all react differently and we all need different things. And on that first Easter day, we read about how his closest friends all reacted differently and needed different things in order to be able to believe, to overcome the disappointment and the doubt and the fear and the lack of hope in their hearts. For that truth to dawn, they all needed different things, didn't they? From just seeing the folded grave clothes in the tomb, to hearing a name spoken, Mary, to sticking your finger in the wound marks. You know, they needed different things. And yet God in his grace, Jesus did that thing that they needed in order to restore their faith and to show them the truth. You know, Jeremiah 29:13 says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. And I know that to be true. I know that to be true, that when we want to believe, when we want to know Jesus, when we want to follow him and we want to overcome our doubts, and let's face it, we all have doubts from time to time. We all have doubts, and they can be massive ones or huge ones or small ones, anything in between. When we want to seek him, when we want to live in the light and the joy and the freedom and the power of resurrection life, and those doubts sometimes get in the way, if we seek him, we will find him. He will give us what we need in order to help us believe. He will meet us in our place of disappointment and doubt and fear and despair, just as he did with his disciples. And he deals with us all on an individual basis. You know, if you've got children, you know how different your children can be and how different you have to kind of speak to them and deal with them and interact with them. Jesus and all his millions, billions of children, and yet he deals with each of us in that unique relationship that we have and gives us what we need at our time of need. If we seek him, I am convinced of it 100%. If we seek him with all our heart, as it says, we will find him. If we seek that resurrection truth and want to live in that resurrection power like Jesus' disciples did, if we seek him, he will meet us in wherever we are, and he will speak to us and show us the way and give us what we need to lift our faith. I'm convinced of it. Just excuse me, turning over my notes to make sure I've not missed anything else. So yeah, I refer again to that topsy-turvy king that I thought Mary probably reflected on, the topsy-turvy king who can win a victory by dying, who can show his love by serving, who can be the greatest leader by giving up his life and by being the servant of all. This is the God that we serve. This is the God that we follow. And this is the God who meets us all where we're at, because he knows us, because he loves us, and because he wants to walk every day with us. Amen.